2008. It's 1:35 in the afternoon. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Huggins is here, Senator Wilikowski, myself, Senator French. Thank you, gentlemen, for making this special meeting. And we have up two bills today, the first of which is House Joint Resolution Number 34, sponsored by Representative Roses. We have, a person from his office who's here to make the presentation. Please come forward, put yourself on the record, introduce yourself to the committee, and be happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Roses. Unfortunately, the representative is not able to be here. They're taking care of other business. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Joint Resolution 34 respectfully urges Congress to reauthorize the Debbie Smith DNA Grant Backlog Program. What this program does is ensures that the DNA kits used to convict the guilty and free the innocent are processed. This program was originally passed in Congress in 2004 and is set to expire in fiscal year of 2009. What this resolution does is urges Congress to reauthorize that program until fiscal year 2014. Currently in Alaska, we have about 400 backlog DNA kits and have been a recipient of this federally funded program since it began in 2004. In the back of your packets, you'll see that I've included what Alaska has done with the money and how much money that we have obtained from the federal government for this. And we thank you for your consideration on this resolution, and I'm available for questions.
Ms. Kieneman, thank you. Questions from members of the committee for Ms. Kieneman? I have one. I take it this will cost the state nothing. This is, in essence, urging the Congress to give us some of their federal money to help us with our DNA problem.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely.
And what is the connection with the Innocence Project and this particular resolution?
Mr. Chairman, the connection, there really isn't one. The Innocence Project, it kind of works on their own. And they go around to the different states. Currently, Alaska has not been part of the Innocence Project. There have not been any, at least what I received off of their website, there haven't been any cases, any Alaskans that have been exonerated.
I think that's accurate, although I think they've recently hired someone to be a point person in Alaska for their group, Mr. Bill Oberle. I don't know if you know him or not, but we had him in front of the Judiciary Committee last week on a separate topic, but I was
wonderful.
When I read through the material, I saw them, and so it popped out at me because it was topical given last week's presentation. And maybe you can just remind me what how much Alaska might get should Congress reauthorize this Debbie Smith Act.
On average, we've been receiving about $160,000 from the federal government a year. It's ranged anywhere from 87 up to 212. So
out of 151 million. Wow. Well, I'm all for free money, but I think I want a little more of it.
As I'm sure they would too. But you know, they believe any money's better than nothing.
Absolutely.
So
other questions for Ms. Kieneman? Thank you so much. Thanks for your presentation. Is there anyone up anyone online who would wish to testify on behalf of or opposed to HJR number 34? Anyone here in the room that wants to testify on behalf of this resolution? Hearing and seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony on HJR number 34 and open the bill or the resolution up for committee discussion. Discussion? Motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that House Joint Resolution 3-4 version alpha be moved from committee with individual comments and zero physical note.
Is there an objection? Hearing and seeing none, the resolution is moved from committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is HB 163, brought to us by Representative Jay Ramirez, and I see his able assistant is here. Welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record. Introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Jay Ramirez. And what I brought before you is HB 163, an act relating to real property foreclosures, to the sale of property on execution, and to deeds of trust. And there have been some changes made to this bill from the last time it was before this committee. On page 2, line 31, AS 0935 140C3 was amended to include newspapers that have a circulation of over 50,000 copies of each issue as qualified internet websites, which non-foreclosure notices may be published. On page 6, line 31 through page 7, line 3, AS 3420-080-A1 was amended so that the trustee may bring an action under AS 2210-020G to establish procedures for accepting bids via the internet. And on page 2, lines 4 through 19, new section 3420-125, trustee bond requirements, all references to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development were removed. And this is pursuant to discussions with DCCED and the Department of Law. And basically what we concluded with this is a matter of private contract, and the bonding requirements will be overseen by the title insurance company, who will not be issuing title insurance without a proper bond in place.
And just I think you said page 2 on that last reference, but did you mean page 10?
Page 10,
okay,
excuse me.
Great. Okay, I was following along, and then I hit a little disconnect there. So let's take them in order. On page 2, line 31, is this matter of internet, or let's call it newspaper notification. And as I understand it, the idea is to allow for an internet website to be the place where you post a notice for a foreclosure sale. And you define that the internet website must be available to any person, must be completely free to the public for viewing, not require a subscription, be used primarily to advertise real estate property under foreclosure. And then it says, or be operated by a newspaper that has in the state a circulation or distribution of at least 50,000 copies for each issue. So it can either be kind of like a foreclosure website, if you will, or it can be a newspaper's website that is available to the person, no subscription, and has a circulation, a print circulation, I take it, of 50,000 copies an issue.
Senator French, that's correct.
And how many newspapers in the state would qualify under this definition?
Senator French, I couldn't exactly tell you that, but Stephen Roth is online, and I'm sure he could tell you that. I know it would include the ADN and the Journal of Commerce, which were the two we specifically talked about at the last committee meeting.
That's would have been my guesstimate of an answer, but maybe we should turn to Mr. Roth. Mr. Roth, are you on the line?
I am.
Did you hear my question to Ms. Pearson?
Just barely.
Okay, I'll get a little closer to the microphone. We're on the first change to the bill in section 2, page 2, lines 31 on page 2, and then lines 1 through 7 on page 3. And my question was, how many newspapers in the state would qualify under this definition?
We just looked at one on the theory that was the biggest one, and that was the Daily News, and they would clearly qualify because their circulation is, I think, pushing 80,000 print copies average per day, and their web hits are, I think, over $130,000 unique visitors per month, so they would qualify probably either way. I didn't go further and look specifically at circulations of the journal. I thought one alternative would be what the committee would want, so I could certainly do that, but I didn't focus on any others.
Right. The question that came up into my mind was, folks in Ketchikan, folks maybe used to turning to the Ketchikan newspaper, folks in Juneau to the Juneau newspaper, Fairbanks paper, Bethel to the Tundra Drums. And so I'm just wondering whether we shouldn't, if the idea is to get the word out to as many people as possible to produce the highest bid at foreclosure, to return the most cash to the lien holder, you just wonder whether that wouldn't be a better idea to make certain that local papers carry these notices.
Is that for me to address?
Either you or Ms. Pearson, but I think she wants you to.
Okay, I'd be glad to. I think that's true as far as the local print. The problem is that the internet publication is a statewide publication. It's not restricted to a borough. So if you have a situation where any legal print publication can qualify to publish on the Internet, then you would have a situation where perhaps some very small publications, maybe more out-of-the-way areas, would be carrying the Internet publications for large urban area cities. And so they might not be noticed as much, and that's why I think having some threshold of circulation makes sense, just to make sure you have enough traction so that there will be visits to that website. And that's initially we conceived this to count the website visitors, and now I think if we have print as well, plus you have the...
Mr. Rothman, let me just jump in.
Sure.
I see your concern. Your concern is that if I allow the Juneau paper to participate, because I think it makes sense for the Juneau paper to carry the Juneau foreclosures, that you could have the Juneau paper carrying the Anchorage foreclosures.
Correct.
Or even worse, the Tundra Drums carrying the Anchorage foreclosures.
Correct.
That's to be avoided. On the other hand, if I lived in Juneau, I would probably never, ever think to check on the Anchorage Daily News website to see if there was a foreclosure in my neighborhood.
Well, you'll have the print media there still. That doesn't go away with the Juneau Empire. And the other thing you'll have is, because of these requirements of the ADN size or the more than 5,000 visitors per month, they'll show up on the search engines. So if you put in, you would search under Juneau foreclosures, you would find those right away. Because of their size, that's how they're going to be found. But it wouldn't ratchet the other way if you typed in, the other way, Juneau foreclosures, and they were only published in a small publication, it might not rise to the level of search you're ever going to find it. And that's why it's good to have some threshold of numbers of hits or visitors, or at least larger circulation in print, some base threshold to make sure that the goal of reaching a wide audience is met.
Actually, you made a good point, Mr. Routh, and that is that the Internet publication does not supplant or do away with the Section A notification. It simply augments it.
Exactly.
Hey, let's set that aside for now. Any other questions from members of the committee? I'm sorry about this section, about the number of visitors and the different locations that the Internet notification can be given. I don't see any. Let's go ahead and turn to the second part, which is on page 6, the second change in the bill, which has to do with accepting bids by telephone. At the last meeting, we discussed this at some length. And I see you've made a change with respect to establishing procedures ahead of time if you're going to accept bids by the Internet. Maybe you or Ms. Pearson can explain that a little bit more.
I'd be glad to.
Mr. Roth, go ahead.
I believe there was concern in the committee about the process of the Internet, taking bids on the Internet, because it is new. Excuse me. It is a new process. And... it seemed like the best way to give comfort on this probably is to have the procedures that the trustee comes up with reviewed by the Superior Court and mandate that. So if you want to accept bids on the Internet, get your ducks in a row on how the funds are going to be handled, how you're going to accept bids, how is it going to be fair and open, prove it to a Superior Court judge and get an order allowing the process, and then you can do it.
And that's what the statutory reference is on page 6, line 31, 2210.020G is a statutory reference to a procedure set by a Superior Court judge?
Correct.
Thank you. And just for the record, remind me, can you do bids by telephone now or by email?
It's not expressly allowed, allowed or disallowed. It happens. I think everybody that does foreclosures does that because the goal is to assist the borrower, get more bids. That helps the borrower on the sale of the assets. So I think everybody in practice does it. This gives comfort to people that even though they're doing it, now there's actually a statutory blessing of doing it that way.
So in the past, and what about email?
Same thing. I think in practice, any trustee, if there was an email saying, I want to bid X on prior to the sale or at the sale, what they would do, what we would certainly do, is we would postpone the sale, verify, contact the person, make sure there's verified funds, and allow the bid to take place. If it's high bid, of course, assuming it's high bid.
Yeah, I guess what's throwing me off about this section, Mr. Routh or Ms. Pearson, either one, is that in the earlier draft, we're working on backslash in November, but in the earlier draft, Oscar, the language read, you could accept bids by telephone, internet, or email, if you'd taken reasonable steps to ensure the bidding methods were fair, accessible, and designed to result in money that was immediately available. That made sense. Then we decided to make it a little tighter, and yet when we made it tighter, all that we added really was internet. That is, it now says a trustee may, in the trustee's sole discretion, accept bids by telephone, internet, email, except that before accepting bids on the internet, the trustee shall bring an action. And I didn't see this to establish the procedures are fair, accessible, and designed to result in money. And I sort of wondered why we left out telephone and email from the internet provision.
I can address that. I believe the reason was that the telephone and email methods are in use right now, and I don't think anybody would in the industry would view them as suspect. They're not new. The internet way of taking bids for a foreclosure auction is new. So I guess my understanding of the committee's concern was that was the one that we should mandate the protection of the Superior Court on, because that was plowing new ground. The other ways, telephone and email, were not new. There's never been an issue raised that I'm aware of where somebody's been injured by that process that it needs specific blessings by a Superior Court judge to do that.
Thank you. Last, and then the last section is the the very end of the bill, lines 10 through 19 on page 10. If you could walk us through the changes made there.
Certainly. It was the Attorney General's office raised some issues about the filing of the bonds and keeping of the bond information with a department of the state, and suggested that maybe that wasn't required since this was a private bond matter, and I concurred, and as did Representative Ramirez's office, and so that was dropped away. So then any references to the, I think it was Department of Commerce being involved, went away as well. The intent of it is the same. The result of it is the same. It protects Alaskans from unscrupulous trustees that might abscond with funds, and at least provide some measure of protection and bonding against that happening.
So just to reorient at least me to the rest to the idea here, before you can perform the duties of a trustee, you have to obtain a surety bond. That's what Section 14 says. This is a new section. The bond must be terminable at any time by the surety. That is, he can back out of it. When you terminate it, the person who obtained the bond may not act as a trustee until the person obtains another bond. And yet we exempt a title insurance company from the bonding requirements and a title insurance limited producer whose license is required by 2166270. What is that?
One is the underwriter, one is the agent. So you have in Alaska a mix. Some of the, like First American, you know, some of the folks you deal with, the First American title, are actually owned by First American itself. They're the underwriter that actually provides the insurance. And some are the agent that are not owned by First American, but they are a licensed agent of First American, so they can bind First American. This provides the protection to both of them.
I see. And in your analysis, there's no reason for oversight from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, with respect to keeping a list of who's bonded and who's not.
Correct.
Questions from the committee about the changes to this section? Senator Wilikowski.
How much does it cost to get a $250,000 bond?
You have to get closer to the mic.
How much does it cost to get a $250,000 bond?
Senator Wilkowski, I believe last time I checked, and this was prior to sessions last year, I think it was around $5,000.
Right now, what, if I could, Mr. Chair, what do you know what percentage of people act as trustees who aren't title insurance companies or title insurance limited producers?
I would think the majority that act as trustees in Alaska are non-title insurance related, and probably close to the majority are entities out of California.
I guess I support the concept. I think it's a good idea to have some sort of protection. I'm just wondering if we're $5,000 is a fairly substantial amount. I don't know enough about it. I guess I'd be curious to hear the administration's perspective on this, if there's someone here from the Department of Administration or Department of Commerce and Economic Development. I'd just be curious to get their take on this, or someone else's take.
Let me just ask Ms. Pearson, was this provision in when it came over from the House?
This provision?
The provision for, as it appeared in version O.
Senator French, it was, and it was not until yesterday I got a call from Department of Commerce, Department of Law, Department of Insurance, and we discussed it, and this was the solution that we thought would work best.
To take them out of it?
Right.
So they're supportive of this?
Yes.
Okay. I don't want to inadvertently hurt some small, if I have, my sister or someone act as a trustee, and all of a sudden she's got to fork over $5,000 to do that.
I
just don't want to have some inadvertent consequences here. I don't know enough about it.
Could I address that concern for a moment?
Please go ahead.
Senator Wolchowski, the way this works in practice is the trustees, it's a professional business nowadays, and the reason the fear that I have is that, particularly with folks with no roots in Alaska coming in that can act as trustee, all you need now is a business license, and there's no formal requirements of any bond or financial stability. But acting as a trustee, then you can go ahead and publish the foreclosure auction and do the steps and create the notice of default and do all that stuff. And then if the borrower wants to get out of the foreclosure and comes in to pay either what is due or pay off the loan, they hand the money to the trustee. It's standard practice. If they do that and the trustee runs down the road, there's just nobody there to stop him. So that's the evil that we're trying to avoid. The time of a trustee wanting to just step up and do this on a one or two basis is fairly uncommon now. I don't want to call it brain surgery, but it is fraught with peril for folks to step into this, and usually the only ones that will have the knowledge would be the ones that are in it every day are going to be professional trustees or the title insurance companies, because they, of course, this is stock and trade for them. But I understand your concern about what happens if someone wants to step into it for one time, but it's not like maybe probating a will where you can do it once and get away with it. I think people would probably not end up doing this on a one or two basis too much, even without the requirement of having a bond.
I guess you mentioned that the majority of people aren't title insurance who do this aren't in title insurance companies or title insurance limited producers, and so has there been a problem with people taking this money and committing fraud, or is that an issue that's going on out there right now?
Yes, not in Alaska yet, but it has happened in probably 5 or 6 western states I'm aware of.
Follow up. We've got a couple of folks who want to testify about the bill. Let's go ahead and turn to them now. And first up is Dennis Finnerty. Sir, are you on the line?
Can you hear me?
Just barely. You may want to get a little closer to that microphone.
Very good. My name is Dennis Finnerty. I'm an attorney in Anchorage, Alaska. I've been representing lenders for more than 20 years. I represent the banks, and I have done hundreds, if not thousands, of foreclosures. And I appeared at the work session, the chairman may recall, and offered my comments on this bill. I believe this bill is very valuable. It brings Alaska into the modern age. I retain a concern, however, about the qualifications for the hosts of the internet publication. I have no problem with internet publication. It is a good idea. I am, however, concerned that the method of fixing my concern, and it was the concern of others who testified before, doesn't really fix the problem. And I'm dealing with Section 2, Subpart C, which amends 0935140 on page 3, the very top lines, 1 and 2. The concept of 50,000 circulation before a newspaper could host a website that qualifies. I was on the phone with the publisher of the Alaska Journal of Commerce, and he told me that his paid subscription is 5,000 a week. So the journal would not be qualified to answer one of the questions the chairman asked earlier. So we are authorizing just the daily news, maybe. And I don't think it is wise to empower any single entity to provide a service, because they can become, with the monopoly, they can become dictatorial in pricing. And that concerns me. The 50,000 copy number will qualify the daily news. However, the daily news may still be disqualified for hosting internet publication under Part 5, line 4 on page 3, which requires, in addition to being a newspaper with a circulation of 50,000, have a viewership of 5,000 visitors each month to the website. And I don't know whether the daily news meets that test. May I suggest that what the legislature may want to do, based on your comments, is merely incorporate the concept that is already applied to newspapers for newspaper advertising and authorize any newspaper to host internet publications, host the website, if they are a newspaper of general circulation under Alaska Statute 09.35.140, which already establishes the standard for a newspaper that may host foreclosure ads in a judicial district. And the definition of newspaper of general circulation for purposes of that statute incorporates the concept of newspaper circulation within the judicial district where the sale is to occur. And I believe, therefore, that my suggested fix is to add a newspaper of general circulation as the host under C3. And so it would read, be used primarily to advertise real property under foreclosure or be operated by a newspaper of general circulation under Alaska Statute 09.35.140. And then I would encourage the committee to change the number of website hits to 1,000 under Subpart 5, line 4. I believe 5,000 would exclude or may have the effect of excluding the daily news, and I believe those two changes would open the host sites to competition from the Journal of Commerce and others while still protecting the concept the committee was concerned with. In other respects, I would suggest that this bill accomplishes very good things, and I would urge you to pass it. I believe, to try and answer Senator Wilikowski's concerns about trustees, under a deed of trust, the trustee owes duties to both the beneficiary and the borrower. And it is not a business that the legislature should want people to get into easily. And posting a bond is a prudent course, and I don't think we want to make it so easy that anyone can intend to act as the trustee. And so a barrier to entry of a $5,000 premium for a $250,000 bond shouldn't be of concern to the legislature. I am available to answer questions if anybody has any, but I would certainly hope that we carefully not create a monopoly to host the websites, website advertising.
Mr. Fennerty, thank you for your comments. I'll just say that if you wouldn't mind typing up your suggestion with respect to the comments you just made in Section 2 and forwarding that to my office, I would appreciate that.
I will do so.
Any other questions for Mr. Fennerty while we have him on the line? Sir, thank you. Next up is Mike Price. Mike Price, are you on the phone?
I am, Your Honor. I am, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yeah, great way to start your testimony. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Put yourself on the record. We'd be happy to hear what you have to say.
Thank you very much. I'm Michael Price. I'm the owner of Matsu Title Insurance Company in Wasilla and Fidelity Title Insurance Agency in Anchorage. I've been a real estate attorney since 1975 in Alaska. During that practice, I was twice chairman of the real estate section of the Bar Association, State Bar, and I probably, like Mr. Fennerty, have conducted thousands, I know, through 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 foreclosures in my years of practice. I also oppose the internet provisions of this bill. As I understand it, as the bill is currently being proposed and discussed, there may only be two websites that would have an income capability to host these foreclosures. One would be the Anchorage Daily News, and the other would be, I think, one that might be owned by Mr. Ralph. And I don't think it's the legislature's best interest to, in effect, start off a bill that requires only two sites, and because of the 5,000 hit a month requirement, would probably mean that no sites would ever get qualified other than the Anchorage Daily News and Mr. Ralph's. I, you know, do foreclosures on behalf of the title companies. They publish in the Frontiersman and in the Valley and in Nome Nugget and the Fairbanks papers. This legislature has for 25 years utilized, and in addition to the court system, has utilized the papers of general circulation, as Mr. Fennerty says, is defined by either a circulation of 500 papers or 10% of the judicial district in which this paper is located, as the criteria for what is a proper notification. And in fact, in this bill, you continue that, and I would urge you to, if you are going to require or to encourage internet advertisements, that you do so to the maximum number of people possible. And I would encourage you to, as Mr. Fennerty said, I would also encourage you to accept the same language as you would for publication, written publication in the paper. Mr. Fennerty suggests that you take the 5,000 hits per month down to 1,000. I respectfully suggest that since we have no evidence in front of this committee, I don't think, of what, for instance, the Matsu Papers website is hit, or the Nome Nugget or the Fairbanks Papers hit, I would respectfully suggest that we not necessarily establish an arbitrary hits per month. If it is a newspaper of general circulation, then I think we could eliminate in total subparagraph 5 on the top of page 3. Lastly, I have one other point to make about the bill. On page 4 of your draft, I guess, line 5, we are including the words up to 2 days. Does the committee see that?
Yep, I'm with you.
Okay, so
page 4, yep.
So, in effect, what this bill does is to say that the beneficiary, the lender, does not have to accept a cure can accept a cure up to the 2 days before a sale. That language is inconsistent with, I would conservatively estimate 100,000 existing deeds of trust in the state. which basically is a matter of contract between the borrower and the lender, and the deed of trust basically said that the borrower could cure this, you know, could cure any acceleration up to the time of sale. And so I guess I would encourage the legislature to look at the ex post facto implications of changing 100,000 deeds of trust out there, and it would either suggest that you add as a dependent clause to that sentence, unless otherwise provided for in the deed of trust or the security instrument, or if this is really the intent of the legislature, that you're going to change all of those existing deeds of trust and prohibit a borrower from curing 24 hours before a sale, then I would, for purposes of establishing legislative history, I would like to see that you establish some legislative history to guide the courts in what will be inevitably a court challenge to the fact that there are deeds of trust out there. As I said, conservatively, I would imagine 100,000 of them at least, that says you can cure up to the time of sale. And that's a contract between the borrower and the beneficiary. That contract was agreed to by the beneficiary, the lender, and anybody who bought the note. And I'm not really sure why the legislature would then be taking a 90-day foreclosure process and for purposes of curing and purposes of allowing the borrower to come up with the money to stop the foreclosure, reduce it by 2 days. I know there's some real reasons why, if you're a outside lender and if you're an attorney such as myself conducting sales, it's always a big pain to hear from the borrower 24 hours in advance. But what I'm trying to tell the committee is that deal was struck over the last 20 years, tens of thousands of times, where the borrower has the right to cure right up to the moment of sale. And if it's really the intent of the legislature to take those last 2 days away, then I would suggest we at least try to include as much legislative history as possible as to why we have, in an ex post facto fashion, want to change existing contracts. And I also, therefore, would have, I'd be open to any questions. Most of the bill is good. These two provisions, though, I think are unconscionable, and I would urge the legislature to amend and remove these two sections.
Mr. Price, thanks for testifying. And particularly in these specialized areas of law, it's extremely helpful to hear from people who do this for a living. And so I thank you for making time this afternoon to testify to the committee. Questions for Mr. Price? And Senator Wilikowski has a question.
It's not a question, but I think Mr. Price has made some really good points, particularly on the up to two days before the sale. I guess it may cause some problems. It may cause some additional costs for the people who are involved in this, but they're responsible for those costs under current law. So I guess I wouldn't have much of an objection to removing that. On the other issue, it's an interesting debate, and I'm just going to think aloud here for a minute. If I'm in the Matsu Valley and I want to reach Matsu potential buyers, I'd probably want to put something in the Matsu paper, the Frontiersman. Same in Juneau, same in anywhere else. So I don't know what the answer is, but I think limiting it to one newspaper or one or two internet sites, I don't know that that's the best answer. On the other hand, I understand the other argument that once you start broadening that out, and if you allow any internet website or a large number of internet websites, then it's going to be that could be buried somewhere, and it could be difficult for someone to find. So there's a balance there. I don't know what the answer is yet, but just thinking aloud.
I share your concerns. I want to continue to work on that section of the bill. I would point out that the 2 days before sale provision was in the bill as it came over, and I'd circled it at the previous hearing, but I don't think we'd heard any testimony about it. But today we've had testimony that it may be contrary to the testimony was hundreds of thousands of deeds of trust that are out there. So I flagged it, and I'll talk to Ledge Legal about maybe adding some qualifying language that means that keeps the provision in the bill as long as it doesn't conflict with other provisions in a contract signed by you know, of folks when they bought their home or property.
I guess I would just ask, Mr. Chair, from my perspective, and I don't know, maybe we'll end up voting on this ultimately, but I guess from my perspective, you know, if someone's potentially losing their house or their business here, I think I wouldn't, I would think that we would allow them to pay right up to the time of the sale. I think, you know, if someone's in that desperate strait and they can come up with the money on the day of the sale, they're going to pay the additional costs that are borne on that.
The late fees,
the attorney's costs, they're paying for everything. And if they can't come up with the money until the day of the sale, it may be an inconvenience, but they're paying for that inconvenience. And at the risk of someone losing their home or business, it seems fair to me.
Somehow I think the foreclosure folks are going to have more work for themselves before this little wave is over than less. But Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. I agree with Senator Wilkowski. But I guess, Jane, in the up to 2 days prior to the sale, there obviously was some debate on that subject previously. Could you share that with us?
Yeah, Senator Huggins, through the chair, there has been debate on that previously. As the bill was originally drafted, it was 5 days prior to the sale. And in the House Judiciary Committee, we went around with that, and this seemed to be a balance between the costs that would be incurred and litigation that may arise if you left it up to the day of sale. So this was our balance for it. And, you know, after listening to Mr. Price's testimony and the fact that there are already deeds of trust out there that may be up until the day of sale, I think that there may be an amendment that needs to go in there to clarify that and
I
get in the middle of it.
I jotted down here. We'll discuss whether we want to continue to shorten that period or take it out altogether. If we do keep some period of time in there, I think it's clear we're going to have to modify it to make certain that it's subsidiary to any language in a deed of trust. That is, deed of trust says up to the time of sale, that's going to continue to control. That's the contract that's the deal folks struck when they put their money down and did the commercial transaction. And so I'd want to continue to honor that.
I agree with
Representative Rammers, welcome to the committee. I see you have at least a break from the floor. Maybe you're finished. I don't know. If you have any thoughts or comments, we're actually close to wrapping up. The bill's been presented and has changed. We've had good testimony on it. There's two little nagging, I think, issues for us to continue to work out. One is with respect to Internet advertisement and to make certain we're not handing a monopoly off to the Daily News. As a former prisoner of the Daily News' advertising rates, I'm more than thrilled to have Craigslist out there to compete with them. And that's just my little editorial comment. But if you have something you want to add, we'd be happy to hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Jay Rammers, District 10. Delighted to be before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Thank you. We are very amenable to the changes that we've discussed with your office and with your staff. We thank Cindy for her help as well. And as you know, in Fairbanks, we're paying $3.65 a gallon for fuel oil now, up 17 cents from a week or 10 days ago. I'm very concerned that we're going to have energy foreclosures that are driven not by a permanent resident of Fairbanks' inability to service their mortgage, but to their inability to service their mortgage plus their roster of utilities. And although I use banks, I'm always concerned about the relationship and ever mindful that the lender is far more interested in seeing that they are made whole when a homeowner is distressed and is going to have to surrender their home. And I'm delighted for you, Mr. Chairman, and your committee's cooperation in protecting the remaining equity so that when a homeowner is presented with this very dire circumstance that at least the Alaska State Legislature is looking out, that whatever equity can be harvested from that distress sale will return to the homeowner. And I think we're making great strides to do that, and we appreciate the improvements and the amendments that are going to be offered by Senate Judiciary at the appropriate time.
Representative Ramos, thank you. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, I guess you missed, I think, my soliloquy on you know, what the proper tension is between putting it all, having them all advertise in one large publication that it reaches a large number of people versus maybe the Fairbanks Daily News Miner up in Fairbanks, which, you know, tailored for the people up there. I guess I'd be curious, not at this time, but if we could get some information about how other states deal with that problem. And you want to have, I think, some competition so that different Internet websites or different newspapers can post this potentially, but at the same time, you don't want to make it too small where it's watered down and no one can find it. So,
if I may, just on that point, Mr. Chairman, we were hearing another bill on the film industry presented by the Senate Chair of Labor and Commerce, Senator Ellis, and we were going through all the various provisions that would be credited back to a taxpayer who's a C Corp. And the question that I posed is, well, how are the C Corp taxpayers across the state of Alaska, and I think there's 800 of them, how are they going to find these credits that are be offered by the Alaska Film Program, or I forget the acronym. And Senator Ellis had talked about, as the bill sponsor talked about, brokers that would handle that. And it was a fascinating conversation, and it's really along the same lines of what you're concerned with, which is, how is the public going to know? Ultimately, philosophically, and we will happily work with the committee, the committee's improvements to this. Ultimately, I just know that it's far superior to have two buyers than it is one buyer. So however we create an environment that poses two buyers, I'm all in for that notion.
Great.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. This is Jane Pearson. I think also there are provisions where it has to be posted locally, and it also has to be in the local newspaper. So the internet provision is really an expansive provision. We are not doing away with your local provisions. We're trying to expand it so maybe there's more bidders.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. Stephen Routh.
Mr. Routh, go ahead.
I just wanted to make a couple of responses if I could. The Daily News, last month that we looked at for unique visits had 123,716. So for to make the claim that they might not qualify with 5,000 being the threshold for the bill is not correct. They far exceed that. I expect probably the Journal of Commerce does and would qualify in this section even without the added newspaper part to it. And I would urge the committee, although it sounds like an easy fix to say if you qualify for print, you're qualified for internet, I think that'd be a bad idea because what's going to happen is you're not going to get the wide publicity to attract the bidders that you would if you get a higher threshold with either big newspapers or big websites that can actually get the message out, get higher rankings. When people search, you're going to find the stuff. I think it'd be a huge mistake if you're trying to sell property in Juneau and it's being advertised primarily in the Tundra Times. This would be a disservice to everybody involved in the process. As Representative Ramirez said, you need to attract bidders, and that is exposure. That's the bottom line, it's exposure. That's why real estate brokers buy full-page ads in big newspapers. They don't buy them in small ones, they buy them in big ones to get exposure, and that's what we want for these sales. And with that, I'll back away.
Mr. Routh, thank you. I think we all share the same goal, and we're just trying to grope our way towards the best way to do that. Other questions or comments about the bill to come before the committee? Hearing and seeing none, we are adjourned.